Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm Risa Williams. I'm a therapist and the book author of The Ultimate Time Management Toolkit and other books. And this is a podcast about getting stuff done without all the stress. And if you'd like to work with me on getting stuff done, I have two Get Stuff Done groups coming up in March, both on March 15th. The first is Get Stuff Done Goals Group, where we work on all sorts of goals together. That's at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. And the second group is just for moms, the Get Stuff Done Moms Group. This is a time management group just for moms to help you get those busy schedules simplified down. So if you'd like to join in, go to patreon.com/Risa Williams and you can see all the groups and workshops and classes there. And now for another episode on getting things done without all the stress. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm here today with Chegofasu Endebane, who is a writer and PR strategist. And she's been on the show a bunch of times. We always have such fun talking. And today we're going to talk about the subject of perfectionism and how we can be a little kinder to ourselves. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. So it's always lovely to have a chat with you and connect with you.
I feel the same. I always have so much fun talking to you. And I know I've struggled with perfectionism in my past, and I know you have too. We've talked about it before. And I think about perfectionism as we're setting different rules for ourselves than we have for other people. And that's how I like to explain it to clients. Like, are you making different rules up for yourself versus other people? An example of this would be like, if someone else makes a mistake, do you say, oh, that's okay, no one will notice, it's fine? And then when you make a mistake, do you say, oh, it's the worst, everyone's going to see this, this is awful, I have to redo this whole thing, it's a disaster? And there are so many versions of this where we have one expectation, like it's all okay, everyone else can make mistakes and learn and grow slowly, but I need to do it all instantly and perfectly, or else all these bad things will happen. So the way I look at it is, could we make the rules a little more the same? Do we need to have these different negative and harsh rules for ourselves that we would never inflict upon other people, especially people we care about? How do you look at perfectionism?
Risa, I love that definition. I think it's the first time I've heard anyone explain perfectionism in that way. It's probably one of the kindest ways I've heard it defined. So I'm going to jump on that, because I think for the longest time, I've always kind of had the idea that perfectionism was essentially a fear of not being good enough. Yeah. And I think that that's part of it. But yeah. I love what you're saying about like that you're putting a bit of a relational aspect to it and bringing in all the people that we care about and how much easier it is to be kinder and more compassionate to other people as opposed to ourselves. Because I've also find that for me, perfectionism seems to go hand in hand with like procrastination. Right. So it's like there's this thought and this feeling around maybe not good enough or maybe not doing things right or whatever the case may be. And then the action that comes with that is to then procrastinate, because then maybe if I wait until the absolute last minute to do something, if it all goes bad, then like having waited to the last minute could, you know, is automatically a reason of why. And we don't necessarily have to like judge ourselves very harshly. So I do think in some ways, like perfectionism, procrastination, those sorts of things, that they're actually protection mechanisms, like that we use them to protect ourselves in some ways. But I don't know if they are always helpful.
So I love what you're saying. I just finished a book that I'm writing called The Procrastination Playbook. And one of the main things I found through all the research and studies about procrastination is perfectionism is one of the main ways people procrastinate, because there is a socially accepted element there where people are almost proud of being a perfectionist, and you could say it and people kind of think, oh, okay, right. You're a perfectionist. You have high standards. Something in there allows us to procrastinate in a little sneakier way than if we're just saying, I don't want to do that task. I don't like it and I don't want to do it. Right. Then there's a layer of shame. And the sneaky part about perfectionism is it's a way of fooling yourself for a really long time and stalling out and never starting. So you could say, I'm waiting for the perfect time to start writing my next book. Well, I know from experience, if I did that, we'd just be waiting for forever. Like, there is no perfect time to start writing a book. It's always messy and sloppy and uncomfortable, you know? So I think we stall out because we say, I'm waiting for the perfect moment. Or you could say, I'm waiting for the perfect gear. Or I'm waiting for the perfect research to be done. These are stalling techniques. And we need to get really honest with ourselves. Underneath it all, are we stalling? Are we really scared of something? Are we scared, like you said, is it a self-protection mechanism? If I never start, no one will ever see it and no one will judge me, or I won't judge me.
I love that. I think, yeah, that's definitely true for me too. And it's kind of, I think that there's something even just about describing ourselves as perfectionists. Like, as you said, like, it comes with, because it's so socially acceptable, like it comes with like the badge of probably having high standards or whatever. And I think it's so much easier to kind of go into the world with the armor that like we have high standards. And it's a lot harder to say that like we're scared, you know, because I think that's right. Also maybe in moments where perfectionism does kind of rear its head, like what is the actual fear, you know, like what is the actual thing that we're afraid of? Like, it could be judgment, it could be criticism, it could be, you know, not good. Like, I think there's a whole host of things that it could be.
Yeah.
So I find that, you know, it's good to sometimes also kind of question like what the thing behind the thing is.
What is it?
And put a word to that feeling.
Because it could be a really deep thing, but it could be something not deep too that just needs a little like digging out, right? It could just be you don't want to do the thing. I don't want to do a lot of things. A lot of things are uncomfortable and stressful. And when I'm honest with myself, I think, you know, is the thing I'm fighting just the uncomfortableness of it? Like just starting the book and typing, like that's very uncomfortable. Like if I'm very honest, sometimes it's something silly like that. That it's just like, I don't like the first step of doing something. Other times it runs a little deeper. Like you said, it goes into our self-esteem and we may not feel good enough or strong enough or like believe in ourselves enough. So it's kind of investigating it and seeing like, is this a little thing that's just I'm avoiding, or is this a deeper thing I need to work on?
I love that you mentioned that too, that sometimes it's like not a big deal.
It really isn't.
Like, when you're thinking just about like this, as a writer, I could definitely like identify with this something about an empty page that's just like,
it's so, you know, uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
It really
it's not,
is.
In the greatest scheme of things, it's not that big a deal. It sometimes I'm literally putting a few random words on there, you know, just so the page is not empty anymore.
Right. What helped me as a writer? I mean, writers are masters at procrastination and perfectionism. If you want to know about these two subjects, just talk to any writer. They struggle with it completely. Writing is one of those weird things. Like every writer you meet loves it, but also hates it so much that they will avoid doing it a lot of the time, which is why there's like a meme going around. Like if you want to see a clean apartment or someone like clean their house, like ask a writer a week before the deadline, how clean their house is. Their house is really clean.
That's how you know how much writing needs to be done. Like the cleaner the apartment, like my private admin.
You know, how clean is my kitchen right now? It's like a procrastination meter.
Yes.
If I'm scrubbing the oven, something's wrong. I have a deadline and we're not hitting the deadline. This is just a public service announcement for anyone out there who has writers in their life. This is what's happening. If you see them scrubbing a shower or an oven, we're both laughing a lot because it's so true.
Yeah, I'm crying.
What helped me is the idea of a crappy first draft. The idea of a terrible first draft, I think, is what cured my own writing perfectionism. The idea that I should just put stuff, I should show up. You and I have talked about this before. With any habit, like just show up, put whatever on the page, even if all you do is type the worst sentence you've ever written. It almost gives you permission then to open up that creative tap and let the words come out. Because perfectionism has a way of closing that tab off really quickly.
It can be so, so debilitating. And I think that's the thing about it. Perfectionism and procrastination, they can feel very, very debilitating. And just like a lot of anxiety that's just sitting and like it's not moving anywhere. And I love what you're saying about just like terrible first drafts. Because I find that, you know, I like to apply that rule, I suppose, permission to just new things in general as well. Because I think that there's, you know, the thing about being a perfectionist is also the expectation that, you know, to be good at everything first time around. So even if it's something that I've never done before, I really want to be good at it, you know?
Like you have to be Mozart the first time you're plunking keys on a piano. It's not going to happen for any of us.
It's not going to happen. It's not like if I'm doing something new, something I've never done before that kind of intimidates me, or even if not, you know, it's just like I find that it helps to actually make that the first goal of the thing, is that it will be like the goal of it is to do it really, really bad, you know?
I love
and it's
that.
Just like,
and set I think the bar kind of lower. Set the bar really, really low, and then you'll do amazing by comparison. But if you set the bar way high, you're going to feel awful that you didn't reach it, and then you're going to shut down and not want to try it again. So if Mozart is the bar for the first time you play piano, all of us would just give up piano. But if it's like find a key and plunk it, we're going to blow that goal out of the water, that we're going to play like two keys.
No, I love that. I'm definitely all about trying things bad. So I coming into this year, actually, I usually do a word of the year that's kind of like a guiding, I suppose, you know, just like a guiding word or whatever. And I couldn't find one for some reason this year. So I kind of ended up on a phrase, and the whole thing was around, you know, do things badly rather than not at all. And I think just, I mean, this went for absolutely everything. It went for starting a newsletter. It went for making friends, like making new friends, you know, like to even just appearing on podcasts, like having conversations with different people, all the way up to doing it even bigger and like a little bit more intimidating, like writing my master's thesis. And I think that that's kind of been the guiding thing with all of those things, was that, you know, like all I have to do is to show up, and like I can do them absolutely terribly. But if it's either that, as opposed to just not doing it because I am scared.
Because you're letting your fear shut you down.
And I find it's helped me do a lot more, like a lot more things that I probably wouldn't. It's helped me even be a little bit more social. I'm an introvert. I gain a lot of energy just like being by myself. And like that's never been a thing for me. But I started thinking, I was like, hey, like what spaces can I kind of like get into? Like where can, you know, like how do I meet people? Like how do I even, you know, connect with new people, that sort of thing. So it's been really, really good. And I find that like I mean, I've written a thesis before, and when I was thinking about my previous experience of doing a thesis as opposed to now, and I was like, well, I think just kind of going through it with that idea that like all I have to do is just do my data collection badly, like I just have to, you know, write a bad first draft, all of that, it made it so much easier to go through that process. Because as you'll probably know, Risa, like writing a thesis is a really intimidating read.
It never feels like you're getting it right. I mean, you just got to go through it. Like the only way out is through. Like most things. And you just got to get through it.
Keep it going.
And the thesis writing is all about that, or dissertations that I help people with in sessions. It's like, you just got to get through it. Like, I don't think a lot of people are having fun doing most parts of that.
And you can absolutely love it. Like, even when you're passionate about like the topic,
the
and
subject,
that,
it's the actual putting it in the format. Yeah. I love what you're saying. I'm looking at it through, when you're talking, I always think of analogies and I'm like, ooh, the professor part of my brain is like, maybe we should rebrand this as you just have to participate. Like, you know how you get a grade for participation in some classes? It's like, all you do, it's not an A through F grade. It's just participate or don't participate. That's your grade.
So,
so what if we just gave you a participation grade? Like, this is not an A class. This is like show up, participate, check, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I'm going to get like little gold stars and like keep them somewhere. Like,
in the and you just, I get good stuff. Just, you just like, got through it. Yeah, okay. Like, did we participate in a podcast? Yes, we get a gold star. Yeah. I mean, I use stars with a lot of my clients because it taps into the fun part of their kid brain that liked that, like that just liked getting gold stars and unicorn stickers and whatever for just going to class. Like, all you did was you went to class, you sat through the math assignment, you get a unicorn sticker. That's all you had to do. So why do we make adult life so hard?
And maybe that's the thing, right? Like, I think that like something about like being childlike and like not losing our sense of playfulness helps with things like perfectionism. I mean, as adults, we do like, I don't think we lose our sense of play. I think we just tap it.
It's so serious. Everything is so serious.
And our inner children are always like, hey, let's hang out. Like, what game can we play? We even see it with like the little exercise watches and all of that stuff, like how people rave over that stuff. Because I think it taps into like the parts of us that like gets, you know, a little
that want to play. Yeah.
Yeah.
And perfectionism, that's the thing. It saps all the fun out of anything you're attempting to do. So if you want to kill the fun for yourself, tell yourself you need to do it perfectly. It kills all the fun.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Saps it out. Just like.
Like, I'm about to go make lunch. If I tell myself that lunch has to be perfect, I've just killed the fun of any fun I would have found in making lunch. It's now gone. Now I just hate making lunch.
That was a chore.
It's a chore. And now I'm like judging myself as I'm like making a sandwich. So So we do this to ourselves all the time. I mean, we're laughing about it, but when you're really in that state, you're looking at everything you're doing through that lens. And that, of course, is going to affect your mood. Of course, it's going to affect your self-esteem. And the thing is, I think we do it because we're like, if I hold myself to this high standard, I'll eventually like rise to meet it. And that might be true, but you will not come out of it feeling all that confident. Whereas what we're saying is if you learn to play and you give yourself more of a pass about your performance, oddly enough, it increases your confidence. Putting the bar lower and feeling like you hit it makes you have that confidence boost. Whereas if the bar is super high and you're never hitting it, you never let yourself have that confidence boost.
I think as well, there's just something, you know, as you were saying that, Risa, I thought about just talking about playfulness. It made me think a little bit about being aware in those moments where the perfectionism does come up of our inner children, actually, just to go back to that of compassion and kindness that you spoke about earlier. It's like, well, if your inner child was sitting across from you and they were the one who had to do the thing, like, what is it that you would say to them? Because I'm pretty sure, like, we not look at a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old and the age-old version of ourselves and judge them really harshly for doing, you know, for how they do something. So I find that, like, you know, I think that there might be something there just about just kind of trying to visualize and be aware of, like, the little versions of ourselves and, like, how we might respond to them, you know, to, like, think about, like, other people who are also grown-ups and all of that. But I think if there's one thing, like, many people will resonate with is that, like, you know, we try to be as kind as possible to little kids, you know, like
we do.
We don't engage in any way the same way that we might engage with adults. And so, like, it might be important to kind of hold those versions of ourselves and be like, okay, what's the thing you can say to them to kind of encourage them through this moment? And also, like, it's okay to acknowledge that, like, that's what's happening and to say, like, actually, like, I'm feeling a little bit scared or I'm nervous, whatever the case is, like, to just say that and then speak to ourselves from that lens.
To say, I'm scared of this, or I don't know how to figure this out. I'm stuck on this project and I really feel frustrated. Well, voice that. Yeah, don't try to shove it down and say, you should know everything and why don't you know this? I mean, you wouldn't talk to a kid like that. So again, I like that exercise of externalize that part of yourself a little bit. And don't make it so that kid has different rules than all the other kids out there. Like you're saying, you have to be perfect, but all these other kids, they can just scribble on a page and that's great and wonderful. Why isn't it wonderful for us to do that too? So I hope this conversation has given everyone something to think about. I hope you're breaking out those gold star stickers and giving them to yourself just for participating. And the more you do it, the more that muscle grows and the more you want to take on bigger challenges and you don't feel as scared of them. Thanks so much for being on the show today. I really enjoyed
talking. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Take care. If you're enjoying tools discussed on the show, please visit risawilliams.com. There you can learn about my wonderful guests, upcoming episodes, you can check out my books and planners, and you can sign up for my Get Stuff Done goals group. And a big thank you to everyone around the world who's been tuning in lately to tune up your daily mindset. I appreciate you, and I'm glad you've been checking out the show. It's so much fun to see that this show is charting in so many different countries around the world. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time for today. Thanks for listening.